Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I'm John Scott, your host, and I am pleased to be joined by one of the greatest, I don't even want to say tough guys of all time, just greatest hockey players of all time, Sandy McCarthy, coming at us from Salmon Arm, BC. Well, first and foremost, Sandy, thanks for doing this. How are you doing? You look terrific. How's life?
Life is good. Doing well. I'm embracing being a grandfather, right? You know, so one of the blessings in life.
Yeah. And you just say, and the reason we got connected, we were up in Delaney, Northwest Territories a few months back doing a charity game up in the way Great White North. And you just happened to be there. I rolled into the airport lounge and there's this guy just sitting there. I'm like, who is this guy? And then he stands up. I'm like, goodness gracious, that's Sandy McCarthy. So I got to meet you there. And then you got engaged. I don't know if you want to talk about that. On the ice of the lake there. And it's just this fairy tale engagement that kind of put the cherry on top of that whole weekend.
Yeah. You know, as for the engagement, we won't go into that too deeply. It's some other things have transpired since then. So, but it was an amazing time and it was an amazing event. You know, it was exactly like you say, a fairy tale event for myself and her.
Let's talk about the hockey side of it, because we were there and there was all these legends there and you fit right in. And myself growing up, I grew up in St. Catharines, Ontario. You know, you're a Toronto guy. You played in Laval in the Q. And then I was doing a little research for this interview, because the first thing, obviously, when you think of Sandy McCarthy, much like people who think of me, it's just like, oh, big tough guy. You know, big, dumb, tough guy, knuckle dragger, doesn't know, you know, his head from a hole in the ground. And then you meet someone like you and you're very soft-spoken. And you're very well-versed and you're just very thoughtful for what you say. And you're very honest about everything. We sat in that lounge. I think it was Yellowknife and had a nice conversation. I would have never guessed that you are the same guy that played 11 years in the NHL and was one of the most feared fighters ever, because you're just so, you're so chill. Have you always been this way?
I think it's gotten more so in my last decade or so. You know, being clean and sober, and living a recovery life, it's one of the things that come with it. You know, people that knew me in my hockey time probably wouldn't recognize the person that I am now, because I am quite a bit different. Not that I was mean or aggressive away from the ice, but I know that the experiences I've had in life have chilled me out and made me a peaceful human.
Well, we'll get into the hockey stuff in a little bit, but I don't think I would ask a lot of people this, but you seem very open and had some issues with alcohol and maybe other substances. You played in the Q, you won the championship there, and you get drafted by Calgary. You had the kind of the world by the coat strings for a while, coattails, you should say. But what happened? Where did it start to go sideways, Sandy?
Well, my story goes way back, and I haven't really told too many people publicly this, but, you know, I started drinking and using when I was a young kid, right? Like 9 years old. And, you know, I got in a lot of trouble as a young man in my life, and, you know, serving some time in juvie detention kind of straightened me up as a teenager. And, I made a decision that I wasn't going to break the law or do anything against the law when I was 16. And, you know, at that point I was playing junior A hockey. So, you know, it was kind of funny, you know, I made that decision and then 2.5, 3 years later, I was wearing an NHL jersey, right? So, you know, obviously I couldn't say I was an addict at those times in my life. Or in recovery, because I didn't really understand what it was or that you weren't supposed to use or drink. It was more like a social thing as I was younger. But as I got older, it just became, oh, well, I'll do it again today and do it again today. And, you know, sometimes, as you know, playing the game, there's a lot of injuries that come with it. And you get introduced to, like, Percocets and Oxycontins. And, you know, they become a daily routine. And next thing you know, 10 years later, you're taking a handful at a time and drowning them with liquor to wash them down. So, you know, I lived like that for quite a while after I was done the game. to the point where it was like, if I don't make a decision, I'm not going to make it, right? You know? So I did make that decision.
I had a summer where I lost, I think, four friends and guys I played with because they went through the same issue where, you know, you get hurt, you get addicted on these pills, and then all of a sudden, and I'm not saying all of them overdosed, but they, it was Montador, it was Bugard, it was Rippin, it was Belak. And it was just like a boom, 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 boom type of thing. Or it's like, holy cow. And I don't think people realize, you know, we're just humans. Everybody sees this guy on the ice. And so I'm glad you're being open to this because it is a huge issue. And I think the NHL has done a better job with taking care of the players a little more. Because even when I played, they would come up and down the plane saying, look, what do you want? Ambien, Percocet? Like, and they would just pop them like pills. There was no regulations around that. And well, what was it like in your day? Was it just the Wild West? Still same kind of deal?
Yeah, we had pretty much access to what we wanted, right? You know, not to say that they were doing it wrong. It was just the way it was done back then. And, you know, not to put blame on anybody, but it was whatever you wanted was accessible, right? And, you know, growing up the way I grew up, I could find whatever I wanted in any town I was in. Just growing up, understanding a street life as well, you know. But I would say it was a wild, wild west, but that was just the way it was. And that's what was normal back then.
Yeah.
You know, there's no fault. There's no blame to be given for that. But, you know, if you're not right, you need something, right? You know? You know, and then once you've been doing that for game after game and day after day, it's like, you know, the brain tells you, well, you can't perform without it, right? You know? So then it just becomes that habit that gets instilled in you. And, you know, I ended up getting clean and straightening up at like 27. And I went 27, 28, 29, partially through that year, 29, where I was, walking a pretty straight road. But then when the wheels fell off, I hit the brick wall hard, you know. And it was like, okay, well, it's easier. It's easier with taking a few sleeping pills to come down, right? You know, take a few uppers to get up. Sitting up till 4 a.m. after a game because you're wired from the game or from whatever you took to play the game, right? You know, not saying you're taking stimulants, but, you know, just, you know, take a handful of painkillers and that would do the same for me, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that career because I was in, and I get shocked a lot, but this one really threw me back. You played for the Laval Titan. 1991-92. And for everybody listening, this guy had 90 points in 62 games for that team. You have 39 goals, 51 assists. How does that happen? Like, because you still put up 326 penalty minutes. You probably led the league in PIMs and then led the league in points. Were you the MVP of the league? Because those stats, they don't go together. Getting 90 points, then you scroll over and it's like, oh, 326 penalty minutes. Those don't go together, Sandy.
Yeah, I know it was, back in those days in junior, it was pretty wild, right? You know, it's like a fight every game, every second game. You know, I guess to take it back to the reason I played hockey is because I just love the game, right? You know, I love the sound of the skates on the ice. I love the sound of the puck on the boards, the puck hitting your stick, you know, and all the other stuff that comes with it. And, you know, obviously I had another talent where, you know, my father was a boxer. Both my brothers were boxers. I knew how to defend myself well. And I don't know if it was just a personality I had, but I didn't mind fighting. And I actually kind of liked it at some point in my life. You know what I mean? It was just part of my game, right? You know, when things got hairy, I wasn't afraid to fight and, you know, and I was going to engage it too. Being a young man full of it. And, you know, I think when I was 16, I was 6'4", 270 pounds, right? You know, most 16-year-olds don't carry that size. And, you know, at that age, I wasn't quite afraid to use it, you know.
And then you fast forward to, you know, you get drafted by the Calgary Flames. I guess, was there even a decision? Because you go to this camp probably in Calgary, and then was it expected right away? Obviously, Dave King was the coach, and the Calgary Flames are coming off the big Stanley Cup a few years ago. They have some good players, Fleury, Roberts, McInnes, Neuendijk. Like, it's a Hall of Fame lineup, and you're this young kid coming into this roster. What was that like? Did you know right away? It's like, I got to I got to make my mark. I got to fight. That's it.
Well, there was one thing I always knew is that, you know, I didn't know if I was going to be able to play at that level. But what I did know is that I could fight anybody at that level. So for me, well, I wanted to play. I think it's something to do with the way you talk to yourself internally. I never went out and told people that I was the toughest thing that ever lived, but I sure did believe that in my mind. And I think that gave me a sense of confidence, right? A sense of confidence within that it didn't matter who I was fighting. I had a chance to win that fight and I was probably going to win it. And that's what I believed inside my mind. Yeah. You know, I always tried to be humble when talking to other people about fighting, but I always believed that I was going to hurt that person and I was going to win. Right? You know, always happen? Not always, but I truly believe that in my mind, right? You know?
See, I was and I'll be honest, I was always worried about losing. Like I was so concerned about losing a fight that it consumed me to a point where it was like harmful to me, where I was like, I can't lose. Cause then you lose that aura about you. But back in your day, like Sandy, I was looking at the rosters. Every team had killers on every single roster. So coming in as like you were what, 21-year-old kid? So you weren't nervous at all? You had that confidence in yourself even at that age?
Well, I can't say that I wasn't nervous, but I did have the belief that I was going to win, right? You know, like for me to sit here and say that I didn't have nerves going through me every time I fought would be a lie. But I think that was like one of the check marks you have inside your mind. Okay, I'm ready. If I got a little twitch and I'm like, okay, how's this going to go? And obviously nobody wants to be embarrassed in front of 20,000 people, but you know, not having that nervous feeling before a fight is almost like saying, oh, I'm not ready to go, you know? And that, I feel that nervousness, brings out the best in you, right? You know, for me to believe I was going to win, that's one thing, but still, I just knew that was all part of it. Stepping into a fight, you have the nerves. Well, that's normal. Let's step forward, right? Where a lot of people get that feeling and they get that nervous twitch and they step backwards, right? Well, I wasn't afraid to step forward, isn't it?
Yeah. And you played almost every single game in the season. 79 games, right, as a rookie coming right into the NHL is crazy, and playing along with these guys. Was it like, how fun was it playing with the Al McInnes and the Theo Fleury and the Gary Roberts of the world's come in, especially in a Canadian city? Like, that's gotta be something else.
Yeah, it was a special thing. And I think it was like surreal for me the first few years. I didn't quite understand exactly where I was or what I was doing. I was just doing what I did. And I can remember actually right now to the day that I realized that, oh my God, I'm in the NHL. And I think it was like year three or four, I was walking down the tunnel to go to practice and I looked down at my jersey and saw the Flames see on my shirt. And I'm like, damn it, I'm actually here, right? You know? So it was like,
shut up, really?
I guess I was just like trying to be present and live in that moment and not really think too much about what was actually going on, just do what I needed to do, right?
Yeah, like your first year, you're fighting Rob Ray, Jim McKenzie, Ty Domi, Baumgartner, Rob Ray again, Domi again. Like these are the who's who, Louis DeBrusque. Was there ever a time where you just like, I need a break? Like, this is not what I expected it was going to be, because there was not a week that went by. Like, Bob Probert, you finished a season fighting Bob Probert. Like, that's insane, Sandy. You're this 21-year-old kid. Was there ever a moment where you just like, this is a lot, I need a break? Or did you just love every second of it?
I loved it all, right? You know, I guess I could say I loved the attention at that time. And, you know, I always said I wanted to take the top of the tops on to see where I am, you know?
No, I don't even know if you won or lost.
Oh.
Yeah, because you got 19 fights. That's the most fights you've got in your career. In your first year, you had 19. Did you win most of them? Were they draws? Like, how did you fare?
I don't know. I think I did pretty good with most of them. People were saying that, but I felt that I don't think I had a devastating loss or even one that you could call a loss more than just an edge, right? You know, so they're all really good fights. And that was one thing I prided myself on is like, you know, you have a good fight where you're both kicking the crap out of each other. And at the end of it, you can't pick a winner. That's the perfect fight. You know what I mean? The building's just the energy roars off it, right? You know what I mean? Take a few, give a few. Because I had that belief that I couldn't be beat. I felt that at the moment, I felt I won every fight, right? But, you know, and that may not be the fact, but I thought I did pretty good as a rookie that year. I thought it was a solid year for, you know, a fighter.
Hell yeah. How was the old Saddle Dome? Because I got to play in that rink, and it's a very intimate setting. Especially when I can't imagine playing for the Flames when the Oilers roll into town or something like that. Was that something kind of special playing for a team like that? And especially the Battle of Alberta?
Yeah, I loved playing in Calgary. I thought I had a great time there. And, you know, the fans really, really supported me with what I did. And they showed it by the noise they'd make after we'd, you know, get into it. Or even if I'd made a good play or a good hit. And I had really solid fan support when I was there, like on the ice and off the ice. They made me feel loved there, that's for sure.
Which is huge. And then obviously you played with Theo Fleury, who's one of the greatest ever. And you played with him again and with the New York Rangers too, actually. You guys got into a lot of trouble there on the ice, just stirring the pot a little bit. What was it like playing with a guy like that, who's just a piston, but also toes the line of just, you know, the rules? He would consistently put up 150, 170 PIMs and get 80 points in a season. He was just that type of player. How cool was it to play with a guy like that who was just so fun to be around, I bet, in the locker room all the time?
Yeah, it was a great experience playing with that guy, man. He's a very special human being in a good way. I was in my, I guess, the year that I made the team. You know, I was not sure. I said, am I going to make this team? I don't even know, right? And he had asked me to go do something with him. We were going out, and I'm like, you know, I don't know if I should do that. I might not even make this team. And he looked at me and started laughing. He goes, you're going to play for a decade in this league. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, yeah, you got at least 10 years in you. I can see it, he said to me, right? So it was like, I don't know if you knew it or not, but that gave me a pretty good sense of confidence hearing that from a guy that's established in the league, right? You know? And I can say that out of everybody I played with, he was probably the one that I consider my best friend as a player. You know, we spent a lot of time together off the ice and, you know, had some good times and some scary times and some crazy times, right? You know, but when you're in your 20s, I guess that's what it was all about.
And then do you keep in touch now? Because he's been very open about his issues and road to recovery and this and that. But do you guys still keep in touch these days?
Yeah, we've spent quite a bit of time. I can't say every day, but we've spent quite a bit of time in the last year with each other. And, you know, we're both kind of have the same goals in mind now as I am an addictions counselor now. He's working in that trauma field as well. And we've crossed paths probably 10 times this past year. I know that the man I work for is had him come in multiple times to the center that I work at. We played in a sobriety baseball tournament there not long ago together. So, you know, we talk to each other every couple of weeks or so, but, yeah, we still keep in touch yeah, we're still friends, right?
What's, you know, I think the issue nowadays, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're more of an expert at this than I am, but I don't think alcohol's that big of a concern anymore. It's more of just the casual drugs. And then the oxys and the Ambien are still very much around. You're in that field. What's going on? Is it still an issue like it used to be back in the day, or is it just more hidden these days? Cause when I played, it was very much an issue. Oh,
I believe alcohol is like a gateway to everything. Most people start with alcohol and then they lead to, you know, stronger substances after that. There's a lot of like fentanyl, crack, meth, cocaine addictions right now. I'd say the word's getting out on alcohol and how bad it is for you and how bad it is for the human body. With the place that I work at, the Oaks Wellness Center, we see a lot of more substance than just straight alcohol. And some of the alcohol issues we see are in close to my age. a lot of the youth. I think it's the synthetic drugs that are getting the best of them now.
All right. I'm glad I'm staying away from that stuff. It's crazy to think about all the crap that's out there. All right. Let's stay a little more positive. Talk about your hockey career. Cause it's actually incredible that you played 11 years, a bunch of different teams, had a ton of different highlights. When you look back, you know, at your career, what stands out to you the most as the most memorable? What do you take pride in when you think of certain moments? What jumps out to Sandy McCarthy?
Well, you know, obviously my first year when, you know, as a young junior player watching games, I used to really look up to Bob Probert, right? Because he was like the tough guy, right? You know, one of the toughest guys that wore the skates. And so I used to watch and I used to admire the way that he could fight in different styles. Like he could fight in close, he could just throw bombs, or, you know, he had good technical and good toughness. And I always looked to that fight I had with him as going like, okay, well, you know, I've had all these other fights, but this one with him has just proven the fact that I'm legit and that I belong where I am. So I look up to that one. And, you know, I had a couple of years in New York where I won an Unsung Hero Award a couple of years back to back. And those years mean a lot to me as well, as, you know, I was going through my first run through sobriety. I had some rewards in that aspect as well. So, you know, and I can honestly say that every game, every minute, every second that I was in that league was special to me. You know, I am grateful that I got there and grateful that I got to play as much as I did. Grateful that I got to stay there 11 years. You know, a lot of guys don't end up getting that many years doing the job that I did and that you did. We tend to get recycled every 3 or 4 or 5 years. So, you know, the game's a little bit different now, but, back when I played, I thought, you know, just by staying that long and doing it as long as I did was a special thing for me.
Absolutely. And it was back in the day where I think they respected your role a lot more than they do these days. And you got rewarded for it. Like you were one of the better players on the teams for a long time. And you played every day. Like you were an everyday player when you were at the Rangers. Sandy, three straight seasons, 82 games. Like that's incredible. You're putting up 10, 13 goals a season. You fought Ty Domi 9 times, like Oliwa 6 times, Langdon and Francis LaRue, Marty McSorley. You fought 4 times. Was there one guy who you just didn't like? And he got under your skin, and for whatever reason, like, because I fought guys many, many times, and you didn't like him on the ice, but you didn't hate him. But the rumors are Ty Domi. You guys didn't get along. And I played with his son, Max, and I can attest, man, he was a little greasy player. I didn't really like the way he played. But what was the deal with you and Ty? You guys tangled 9 times.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if there was anything personal between me and Ty, but I just knew, like, as a youngster, you know, at that time when I came in, he was respected as one of the tougher guys. And I just wanted to show that I'm willing to fight everybody. And, you know, by fighting him as much as I did, it was just, you know, telling the whole league that I'm going to come after everybody. Right. You know, you got to respect Ty with what he did, man. He was a tough guy, had a lot of fights with him. You know, I don't know if there's a lot of victories on either side. Right. You know, we beat the crap out of each other a few times. You know, I don't really have anything bad to say about him. I only spent a minimal amount of time with him off the ice, and my interactions were always good with him. You know, on the ice, we did our thing. He did his thing. I did mine, right? You know, I respect that, and hopefully he has the same respect back. But, you know, we had a couple incidents, but, you know, it's water under the bridge. It's gone now. At the time, it was, like, heated, and we didn't like each other, but that's just was then, right? You know? No grudge.
One of the most memorable moments where you guys are chasing him around the ice and he's hiding behind referees. And you don't see that very often these days just because A, refs squash, and B, guys just don't do that. But do you know when that's happening? It's like, this is not normal. The goalies fight. You're trying to get at him. You grab somebody, and then Berube grabs somebody. And Richardson grabbed, I think, somebody. Like, that whole sequence was just insane from an outside perspective. And, of course, the great Harry Neal doing the play-by-play was just fantastic. But, like, what's that like? It's in Toronto. it's a hockey night in Canada. Like it's the mecca of hockey and you're trying to chase their tough guys. And he's saying no, like he's running away, actively backpedaling away from you and Berube.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a unique night. Yeah, we both wanted a piece of him. That's for sure. That night, me and Craig both. And, you know, he had his choice, but he chose not to. So, you know, for whatever his reasons were, they're his reasons. I don't like to speak down on people, and I know that everybody has the reasons to do what they did. Maybe he wasn't feeling his best at that moment, or maybe he just didn't want to. Maybe it was stuff that happened before between us that he chose not to fight that night. But, yeah, that was a rough one on him more so than anyone else that evening. And I think he lost a little bit of respect for a little bit around the league for that evening. But all I know is that I wanted to mix it up and Craig wanted to mix it up and he had his choice and he chose not to.
I'm not going to judge anybody, but it's okay to turn down a fight. You know, I've done it a couple times. I'm not proud of it, but I have. But to then go and try to embarrass the guy or to do these antics after the fact where you've already said no and they're actively trying to engage you. It's like, come on. Like now, really? Like you're going to do this after you just said no in front of thousands of people? So that's the part that... And then another thing that bothered me with him, when you guys would fight, if he had you in a bad position, Sandy, he would dig the elbow in your head on the ice. He would throw the late punch. He was always trying to do the extra. And I know you're not going to say anything bad about him because you're a great guy, but that stuff bothers me because there's a code and there's a, it should be a written rule where it's just like, you don't do that, especially with a guy doing your job. That's got to irk you a little bit.
Yeah. He never did anything like that with me. The one thing I didn't like about that one situation was when, Scampi was holding me in the boards and he's only a small linesman and I have respect for the linesman because I know they can make or break you at times and when you're fighting. So, you know, him to come at me with Scampi holding me, I could easily throw Scampi around and went after Ty, but I had respect for Scampi and I wasn't going to do that to him. I think he was just trying to bait me into getting a suspension, right? You know what I mean? But, yeah, as for like, some of the dirty crap, you know, I can't say that, you know, for me, I tried not to do it. If I was giving someone a cheap shot, it's because they've done something to me in the past. And that was just a get even thing. I tried not to grab for your face or elbow you in the head. But I can say for sure that when I was fighting, I did not really care and I wanted to hurt the person I was fighting. Hopefully they would never want to fight me again. Give me a chance to play more, right? You know, I never remember him doing any of those things with me. But, you know, other people have other experiences. And, yeah, I've had many people at times where I've had them down and I could still smoke them a few times, but I've held back on it. And that was one of the things that I thought was important. And, you know, I think about me, if I was in that situation, if someone was still hammering on me, I wouldn't like it very much. So, I tried to live by the so-called code. You know, can't remember every single fight I had and maybe I did go beyond it a few times, but, I really tried to walk that line and understand when, you know, the fighters are down and it's done, it's over, right? You know, I never carried anything off the ice when it was done. The game was over. It was over.
Back in the '90s, you obviously played a regular shift. What was the fighting mentality? Because when I was in the league, it was to a point where it was almost staged. I hated it. You know, I'd go into the game and it would be like, okay, let's just get this out of the way. It almost seemed like a foregone conclusion where it was just, it didn't add anything to the game. And I think that's why the league really stamped down on it because there was no passion involved. You know, there was no hatred. Yeah. What was it like when you were playing? Because you, like Sandy, you got 133 fights. That's a heck of a lot of fights. Were they staged? How did that work itself out throughout a season?
Well, I think a lot of times through the games, it was like, you know, sometimes your team's not playing well. You need to do something to spark the bench, right? You know, sometimes they would happen like that. You'd go out and challenge a guy to try to spark the team. Sometimes you're given redemption from one of your teammates standing up for a guy. As for them being staged, I don't believe there was many of them that were staged or thought about before. I think it was more in the moment stuff. I think over the course of my career, I think there was only a couple of times where I definitely knew before the game was starting, I was going after this guy. But then saying that, it was always because it was something that happened in past games, right? You know, I like to let people know that I may not get you now. I may not get you later in the game. I may not get you next week, but one day I will get you, right? You know, I think there was a lot of intimidation that came into it as well. So you always wanted to have that mask on when you're out there, like, you know, I'm going to get you, I'm going to make you pay. But as for stage stuff, I don't think it played too much into what we did back then. And, you know, honestly, one of the reasons I stopped when I was the age I was is because I started noticing guys weren't training for hockey anymore. Guys were just training to fight. Me loving the game, I played the game for the hockey, right? I love the hockey. I love the practice. I love being around the rink. You know, the fighting was a part of it, but it wasn't something that I went out and trained for to go and just fight. I trained to become a better player. And I wanted to become a better player every year. You know, I took power skating, I think every year up until I was 30. And as for the fighting, it was just, for me, it was a natural instinct to fight. I never actually went and took fighting classes. I never took anything like that. But then I started recognizing guys were just doing that and not even training for the hockey. They were just training for the fighting. And, you know, you got big men out there that are 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", that are 250, 260 solid muscle, just training to fight. Something had to give, right? You know, something had to give before something tragic happened. And, that was the reason I stopped when I did. It's because, you know, it wasn't the game that I loved anymore. It was like guys just preparing to fight. And that's not what
I
wanted.
So I'm the reason why you stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Right on. Yeah.
How nice was it going into a game? You were a good player. Did you know going and you played for some great coaches and been on some great teams, did you get a regular shift? Was that how it worked back in the day where you just, you'd roll four over, let's go until there's a penalty or a PK?
Well, you know, I think that was the intention every game, but you know how games play when it seems like when you're playing fourth line, no matter what's going on, when it's your turn up, there's a penalty being called. And I thought that the flow got messed up a lot through games where, you know, the intention was to roll four lines, but it seemed like every 4 or 5 minutes it was a penalty and it just seemed to happen. It was always when it was our turn up. So, you know, some games I didn't play much and some games I played a ton, right? But I think the intention behind the coaching staffs back in those days were he wanted to roll the lines and he wanted to have an equal bench, but, you know, some of the games just didn't dictate that. And that's kind of like understanding that now more so than then. And you know, at the time you're just like, damn it, I want to play. I want to get out there. You're not playing me. But over time and reflecting and understanding that it wasn't like that. And they actually did want to get you out there, but you know, the game just didn't dictate that at the time. You know, as for regular shift, that came a little bit later in my career. I think, you know, through Tampa and through New York, I played a lot more regularly. Some of my younger days, I've had the, you know, the 1 minute and 30 second games, you know what I mean? Where you get two shifts or a shift and a half. And, you know, I had many of those. And, you know, being a team guy and wanting to be team first, you just try to suck it up. But, you know, me saying that how much I love the game, I just wanted to play, man. I just wanted to get out there and do what I could do, run someone over or make a pass or have a shot. That's maybe me just looking at the best scenario, thinking that they wanted to roll lines. You know, not until later in my career did I have discussions on, hey, what's going on here, right? You know, like, you know, I'm capable and why aren't you playing me? I noticed later, like the last 3 years or so that yes, okay, well, coach wants to put us out. Well, damn it, there's another penalty. You know what I mean? Okay, well, we're up again. Yeah. Damn it, there's another penalty. So it was, you know, understanding it now is a little bit easier to swallow. But back then, sometimes you get a little frustrated. But you try to swallow that and just put the team first, right?
And then even when you're at the Rangers, like it's a star-studded lineup. You didn't have the success win-loss, but like you're playing with Nedved, Lindros, Messier was still there, Pavel Bure. Like these guys aren't killing penalties, so they got to get on the ice too. So it's like, okay, who do we put out? Are we going to put out Bure, yeah, Lindros, or are we going to put out Sandy McCarthy? So there is a pecking order. I played with Kane and Taves and Gabrick and all these heavy skilled. The guy I loved playing for the most was Johnny Taves.
Yeah.
Was there a skill guy who you loved playing with? Because you played, you know, with the best of the best for a long time. Was there one guy that stood out that was like, man, it was cool when you come over and give me the props for doing my job?
Well, it's obviously Theo, man. He's the best.
Was it? Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. I love playing with Theo. You know, it was funny, the first year in New York, they were upset with him and they decided to demote him to the fourth line. Well, that first game, he got like 3 goals and 2 assists, you know. So they kept him there for most of the year. Like, obviously, he played power play and he did some other special teams and that. But I think he ended up leading the league in scoring right up until the last month of the year. But, yeah, I love playing with Theo. And all the other guys, too, you know, they were like, they recognized that, you know, what we did. And they recognized that. And they were always like, good job, you know, and commenting on, holy crap, I couldn't do that. And then I would say, well, you know what? You're paid to score. I would hate to have that job to have to score. You know what I mean? I think it's a lot harder to go out and score goals than it is to go out and get in a fight.
What's it like riding shotgun to a guy like Theo Fleury, who you know he's going to drag you into the fight, even if like you don't want to? Like, that's where you're going.
Oh, I just told him right away, do whatever you want out there. I got your back, man. Right? You know? I thought it was great, man, some of the stuff we got into. You know, it's funny that Carnes one, you know, I was giving it to him pretty good, but then the next time we played, he gave it to me pretty good. So it was like, I got what I deserved that fight, right, you know? One thing people don't know much about is me and Donald Brashear's fighting history. So we played against each other in junior.
Okay, go on.
And I think the numbers are around, we fought each other 24 or 25 times from junior right up through until pro.
Wow.
Yeah.
Expand, go on. Why so many times?
Well, it's kind of like trivial now, but, you know, we were kids playing in the Quebec League. Our team went out one night downtown in Montreal and, we ran into his team out and, you know, me, I don't hold anything personal off the ice, but I went up to shake his hand and he didn't want to shake my hand that night. And I looked at him, I said, you know what? We're going to fight every time we play each other for this. Yeah. So we fought a lot. I don't hold anything against anybody, but, yeah, we had a lot of fights. We fought each other multiple times, multiple games. We fought each other twice a game in junior. You know, being two of the big guys in that league too, he's a big, tough guy as well. Right. You know,
but I would guess you don't like the way he fights. Cause he's very grab you by the back of the net and throw these rabbit punches. Was it frustrating fighting him because he's so in tight?
No, I tried to like, you know, have that in my game that I could fight anyway. Right. You know, if I wanted to clutch and grab, well, let's do that. If you want to swing, let's do that. There was a lot of clutching and grabbing, but, you know, that's how he fought. I mean, I think he gave it to me pretty good the one night, but other than that, we had a lot of pretty close fights. I say he was a tough guy for sure when he played, and he deserves that respect for sure. He played a long time, a lot longer than I did. And kept doing that job day in and day out. So, you know, a lot of people have their theories on him and they didn't like the way he fought. But, you know, anybody that says anything about that, I say you put his skates on and do his job and see how you do. And I respect the guy, man. I ended up spending some time with him off the ice one day and we were all right, you know. He's all right. Trying to do the best he could do as well, right, you know.
Yeah. I want to know about your helmet, because when you think of you think of the goatee and the helmet. Was that a conscious decision? Because you were one of the most intimidating guys out there. You had the Cooper helmet for a long time. the white leather thing on the top. And it was just like a scary, scary look. The old cloth chin strap that just came down. Was that by design or was that just some trainer throwing you a bucket and saying, all right, this is for you, Sandy? Yeah.
Well, I like those helmets, those SK2000s, right? You know, I don't know. I just like the helmet and playing in junior, yeah, wearing that same lid. I used to call it the knuckle buster because the guys would try to hit me and I'd drop my forehead into it. Right. There's many, many times I went in the penalty box and pulled chunks of skin out of the creases of that helmet. So I think it saved me multiple times. And as for the straps, I took all of the nylon stuff off and put leather straps on. I just wanted to keep my helmet on, man. So that's that one stayed on better than any other, right? You know, and the only reason I changed later in my career is because I did get into a fight with Brash one time, Brashear, and that helmet ended up failing and breaking, and a piece of the plastic went and cut me just above my eye for like 18 stitches. And I figured, you know, like these helmets are starting to get rare, and the ones I'm using now aren't actually equipped to protect me anymore, right? You know? So that was the reason I switched to the other helmets. But I used to like it. I used to want people to try and punch me and they just drop my forehead into it, right? You know?
Who were the guys you loved tangling with? Was there a couple guys who you enjoyed? Like, okay, this is going to be a good one.
Well, you know, it's a tough one to say. You know, I think if you look at the series that me and Jim McKenzie had with each other, those were like wicked good fights, wicked good fights. Two big guys. We could both throw both hands and we just wanted to throw. I think I fought him 5 times one year. And I think he was on 4 different teams that year. I don't know if it's a record or something, right? But yeah.
Is there one that you'd point people to? It's like, go check this one out.
Well, I mean, obviously because of, you know, where Probert was, and it was, from what I understand, it was his last fight as a Red Wing. It was that fight that I had with him in Detroit. Cause I know he only played a couple more games that year. Cause he ended up getting a 5-game suspension for the headbutt at the end of that fight. But, I'm going to say that one there because it kind of solidified the fact that, you know, like he's no joke, right? I'm no joke and that you better be ready.
Yeah. Well, you are no joke and I'll leave it at that. I appreciate you coming on, Sandy. It's been a pleasure picking your brain. Hope all is well. Hopefully we cross paths again, my man. Anything else you want to leave us with? Some words, sage words of advice.
Just treat people nice, man. You never know what things that people are going through in each day. And, you know, the battle is real for people out there nowadays in the world. And, you know, doing the work that I do now, I'm seeing some of the trauma people are dealing with and, just have some understanding for each other. You know, it's not a race, man. It's a marathon and we got to get through it in a happy, peaceful place, peaceful way.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. Yeah. Spoken from a man who's kind of done it all and is now trying to make other people's lives better. So thanks, Sandy.
Yeah. Right on, John. I appreciate you having
me. Good luck with everything, and hopefully we can meet up again one day and share the ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was fantastic, man. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, ciao.